Red Pill, Raw Truth, with your host, Matthew Horbury. Exposing the lies, uncovering the conspiracies, searching for the truth wherever it takes us. The mainstream has been taken over. It's corrupt to its very core and can no longer be trusted. Our history is nothing more than a lie written to deceive us. Global education is a tool used to indoctrinate us into a system to control our very thoughts and stop us thinking for ourselves or even asking questions. The spirit of mankind is strong, and they know it. That's why they're attacking us from all sides using deadly vaccines, fluoride in our toothpaste and in our water, processed foods that contain harmful additives that have little to no nutritional value. They want you addicted to lifelong pharmaceutical drugs that make massive profits for them and cause misery for those that use them. They spray us with chemtrails that contain heavy metals and other toxins harmful to our health and poisoning the very soil we grow our food in. Using genetically modified food, known as GMO, they are turning the population of the world infertile so they can decide who is allowed to have children. Make no mistake, they want you and your family dead, with those that survive being forced to live in slavery in a one-world dictatorship where every aspect of your life will be watched and under their control. Who are they? The secret society, Satan is scum that rule the world. Red Pill, Raw Truth. No stone left unturned. Every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. UK, on the Shake and Wake radio network, where the truth is all that matters, and the truth will make you free. Will make you free. Will make you free. Will make you free.
And problem solving, and in that's been in a number of sort of areas of software, mainly what's called real-time software and things like telecommunications. So I'm used to dealing with quite a lot of technical information. Some people think I'm a scientist because they say that I talk a bit like a scientist, but I'm not really a scientist. I did computer science and physics for my degree, but then I've been in a kind of nuts and bolts engineering role since I finished at Lancaster University in 1986. So, and then I ended up sort of getting involved with teaching and whatnot. And I ended up getting involved with the Open University about 10 years ago. So, you know, and I live in the Midlands. I live just outside Derby. My website is checktheevidence.com. So anybody that wants to find out about me can look at the About section and read the stuff there, which expands on what I've just said a little bit. And there's a contact button, so anybody that's listening, please, you know, if you've got any queries, questions, anything you think is strange, odd, whatever, just write to me and ask me, you know, and I do talk to people on the phone sometimes. Some people like to do that. I'm perfectly open to that. So, yeah.
You were introduced to scholars for 9/11 Truth.
That's right, and that was, you know, one of those sort of things which seemed to have happened because of my involvement with the Open University, really, because that was partly, you know, that sort of made me kind of a lowly academic. I mean, I can't say it makes you, you know, me a great academic because I've not got any advanced degrees and I don't teach on any advanced degree courses. But yeah, so we're talking about 9/11, and one of the things that struck me about 9/11 was the destruction of the towers, which we'll probably talk a bit more about in a bit. But the key thing that I think, you know, both you and I realized, I think you probably saw it in Loose Change, and I saw it in a different film called, the, 9/11, The Great Illusion by George Humphrey. And he showed this illustration of the towers coming, being destroyed. And, he pointed out that the destruction of the towers took the same time as it would take for a ball to free fall from the top to the bottom. Or it's actually slightly less than that. And I thought, hang on a minute, that can't be right. So I went away and checked that. And you can use something called the equations of motion to check that, and the acceleration due to gravity, which is 9.81 meters per second squared, for anybody that knows what that means. And I put those figures together, and I thought, God, you know, that's true. And I realized that I could use that to essentially prove that the official story was false. That alone proves that the official story is false. You know, it really is that simple. And so I was going around posting this on a couple of forums, and one in particular was a physics forum that I'd posted this little formula on, you know, and put the numbers for the Twin Towers in. And, you know, it was blindingly obvious to me that we weren't being told the truth. And this physics forum thread, that is still there, it's now locked, but I think you can still access this thread on forum.fizzle. I forget the exact address. If anybody's interested in it, I can send them the address. I haven't got it to hand at this minute. So I think what happened was that this physics forum was being watched by somebody, and they knew that certain people posting on there about 9/11, you know, had a bit more knowledge than others. And soon after I started posting stuff on that forum, I was then invited to join this group, which was called Scholars for 9/11 Truth. You know, and that was being formed by a chap called Stephen E. Jones, who was a physicist from Brigham Young University in the US, in the state of Utah. And the other chap that was involved with that was another chap called Professor Jim Fetzer, who's at the time, I think, was at the University of Minnesota in Duluth, or the I can't remember if it's the University of Duluth in Minnesota or if it's called the University of Minnesota. I think it's the University of Minnesota Duluth, actually. And so those two guys claimed that they were skeptical of the official story of 9/11, and they so they wanted to form this group, and they invited me to join. So I don't know where you want to go from there.
But it were Stephen Jones and his thermite experiments what hooked me. It was like, oh, that's it, of course, look. And yeah, it was him, and oh dear. When I met you in July last year, I had all the pieces. I'd researched Hutchinson. I'd researched, we're going to get to Hutchinson later, but I'd researched, Stephen Jones, which I want to get to again later. And you just put all the pieces together, and it was just like a big, you just picked the pieces up and just went, there you go. That's the picture you should be looking at. And I like went, oh dear. How can I not have seen that? And it was like a big shock to me. And, I went to the back of the hall where you had a little stall with all your DVDs that you sell for a massive price of 50 pence.
That's right.
And, yeah, and I bought them all. I bought as many as I could, and I just even when I went home, I went back to your website, because on your website you sell DVDs. So if anybody's interested in getting DVDs for 50p, go to Andrew Johnson's website and you can get them for 50p. And I think I just collected all of them. I just went, and then I just spent a few weeks just going through them all and going through all the rest. It was like a major wake up call for me, that in conference. So if we talk about the towers, you've got the two theories. You've got what happened. And that's been massively covered up. So you've got like the truth movement is like a cover for the real story, and the real story is being covered up. So it's like we need to find out what happened, and then we can talk about how it got covered up, if you know what I mean. So yeah,
that's great, Matthew. I mean, thanks for those words, and I mean, I really appreciate that, and I'm glad that you know, the you and I kind of met, and you were in the right sort of. In other words, you got to that point where you'd already done a lot of research, and then obviously seeing what I put together helped you just put the pieces into place. And that's quite similar to what happened to me a few years earlier, because I'd also heard of John Hutchinson, who we're going to talk about later. And, I'd heard of him probably about 6 or 7 years before his name came up in relation to 9/11 research. But yeah, it's very important initially to establish exactly what happened to, primarily we're talking about the World Trade Center site. We're not really going to talk as much about the Pentagon or the Shanksville area, not because, you know, I want to cover that up, which some people might accuse me of, but because there's not as much evidence from those sites, and there are a fair number of witnesses at the Pentagon, and there are a few witnesses at Shanksville. Shanksville perhaps has the least amount of evidence. But there are some very strange things from there, too, to talk about. But of course, at the World Trade Center, there were tens of thousands of people that witnessed the events, maybe even more. And I think most of the TV images, what there were of them, were coming from New York as well. So we have the best chance of working out what happened because we've got the most evidence. And the key thing is, you know, I don't really take much credit for this because what I presented to you at the conference at the wake-up call, which was kindly organised by Paul Giovanni and a couple of other folks there in Leeds last year, was mainly the evidence which has been collated by Dr. Judy Wood, who is really the driving force behind this kind of new understanding and new way of understanding 9/11 and what happened on that. She has really been the key person to pull all this together because of her experience in essentially in materials. She did a PhD in materials engineering science, and she's got a lot of expertise in those areas and mechanics. She taught mechanics, graduate and undergraduate university, so she knew how things would behave when they fall down or when they come apart. So she knew all of that, and like perhaps I did, as you described, put some pieces together. She has put an awful lot of pieces together in terms of the physical evidence. And I did put that link in the chat window there, Matthew, for other people in our Skype chat window, but I haven't got your station chat window up. So if people want to go and look at the pictures on Dr. Judy Wood's site, there is a page of pictures which we could maybe
If you put it in the chat window, if you go to shakeandwakeradio.com, there's a chat window halfway down the page.
Okay.
If you just post it into there, that's this is where I'm going to be posting pictures that we're going to be talking about as we go through it.
Yeah, well, we might just pick ones then. So have you got that up then, that page?
I've got the page open, and I've got a notepad file full of URLs for all the pictures that are kind of relevant.
Okay.
More relevant.
Sure. Well, I just think if we use that page as a common reference because it's already there.
Okay.
Then,
yeah.
We can sort of refer to that. I mean, I think probably what might be best, Matthew, is we'll go through absolutely all of this. We'll try and go through some of the key ones because, of course, the best person to go through this would be Dr. Judy Wood. And I haven't actually spoken to her about, she may, you know, she would, I think if she listens to this, she will be quite happy to come on, you know, in a week's time or a couple of weeks or whatever, when it fits in with her schedule. So I see the chat window there now. So if I paste that in the chat window, see if I can do that, see if that comes up. Okay, I'll just put my name in. Alrighty. Yeah, so I've just pasted that in the chat window there, just with my temporary name, if people want to, anybody's listening and want to click on that. And just bring those pictures up. So basically we're talking about physical evidence here. What happened to the World Trade Center? Because a lot of people, for example, think that the World Trade Center collapsed. You know, is that what you thought, Matthew, originally?
Well, controlled demolition. I thought they'd shipped in, you see, the people who come up with these theories, they cherry pick the evidence that fits their theory, and they ignore all the evidence that doesn't.
That's right.
Anybody could do this. You could probably pick a theory that the World Trade Center came down by anything, and then you could just go around all the photographs, all the evidence, all the interviews, and just go, right, there you go, and I've got the proof. And you put a documentary together, and it looks really well and really sound. And it just muddies the water. You've got to, like, Dr. Judy Wood, she doesn't start with the theory. She goes, let's look at the evidence, and then let's find something that fits all the evidence. Because if it's missing some of the evidence, it's not a complete theory. It's not complete.
Right. I mean, I could give the example that there's somebody that I spoke to in the research community. It's actually this woman called Sophia Smallstorm, who's done postings about various things, including chemtrails, and she made this film called 9/11 Mysteries, which promoted the thermite explanation. That was a few years back. But then later she started saying that it might have been fluoride, which was used to destroy the World Trade Center steel. Can you believe?
It might be fluoride that duped the population into believing it.
Yeah, you could well be right there. So, you know, you get all kinds of these strange things being said. But one of the key things to start off with is what actually happened to the towers, as I said a couple of minutes ago. And Dr. G. Wood points out, and you'll see that this is actually true, is that the towers did not burn up, they did not collapse, and they did not slam to the ground. They actually turned to dust in midair, or about approximately 80% of the towers turned to dust in midair. So in other words, most of the material that made up the towers was dust before it hit the ground. So in other words, that's if you listen to Dr. Judy Wood, that's why she says the towers did not collapse. They went away. Yeah, she'll say they went away. You know, I sort of say they were destroyed. And if people are looking at that page, right, one of the key pictures that I try and show people at first, if you go down that page, you've basically got a few pictures at the top, scroll down. You've got a whole sort of like bullet point list, which starts at A and goes to AE. Go down past that. And then there's a whole list of things. It says number 41. These are points of evidence that need to be explained, which are what has been discovered in the photographic record and other records that Dr. Judy Wood has discovered. And scroll on a little bit further and you come to figure 7. And if you click on figure 7, the actual picture, not the word, you'll get that image comes up a bit larger. And if people are looking, have you got that picture up then, Matthew?
I'm looking, figure 7. Yep.
Yeah, it's the one where the fireman stood sort of roughly central in the foreground. You got that one up, yeah?
Yeah.
So if people are looking at that picture, figure number 7, what you've got, I think, on the left. Sorry?
I've just posted that picture into the chat room.
Oh, great. So yeah, so it's actually got search 2 is the .jpg is the file name. This is again one of the key pictures because of what it shows here. I think the building on the left, is the post office building. The building just to the right of that, which is sort of half obscured or mostly obscured by the dust cloud, is actually World Trade Center building number 7. And as probably many people listening to this will realize, that building was destroyed around about 5:20 in the evening with very strange, you know, nothing hit it. It just went down almost randomly, you might think, at 5:20 in the evening. Which everyone focuses on that, which is fair enough because it is very strange. But this picture itself is probably even stranger because we know that this picture that we're looking at here was taken before 5:20 in the evening because World Trade Center 7 is standing. And if you then look at the sunlight, you can see that the shadows are quite short. So the sun is quite high in the sky. So it's probably taken between midday and probably 2 o'clock in the afternoon on 9/11, right? So we're now going to get rid of one of the stories that was implanted into the truth movement quite early on after 9/11. And that's this, the steel was shipped to China story. This picture alone, and there are others which disprove it, disproves that story. That story is false. It is untrue. And this picture proves that because if you look in the background there, you can see an 8-story building just in front of the post office building. And that I believe is World Trade Center 5 or 6, but it's basically an 8-story building. I can't remember which number it is. Dr. Wood, of course, knows this much better than I do. But that picture in the background, which you can just see, is 8 stories high. So we have 2 110-story buildings here a couple of hours earlier, and now we've got a pile of stuff which isn't even 1 story high. Or maybe at the very tallest point, it's 1 story high. So where did the buildings go?
Well, the truth movement say, oh, that's the destruction of evidence. It's a crime scene, and they make a big deal out of this. And the people who did 9/11 had to have a story. There were no rubber. If they hadn't have, well, we shipped it to China. If they hadn't have said that, then I said, well, where is it gone then? And it had been a big red herring. I was going to post another image into the chat room where it actually shows you the tower compared to the size of the rubble pile.
Great, yeah, that's a good one if you've got, yeah, so that's one that Dr. Wood's put together there. So I can see that you've put that in the chat room. Yeah, and that particular one is very good because that shows the same building, the 8-story building, compared to the size of the rubble pile, which was left, which you just saw in that previous photograph that we were looking at. you know, and again, I encourage people to go look at the other pictures. You know, Google these images for yourself. Find your own versions. If you don't trust Dr. Wood's website, go and look at all the news archives and all that stuff, you know, NIST and all that stuff. And this is what you'll find. You'll find all these pictures show the same thing. And, you know, as Dr. Wood says in her book, where did the towers go? Where did they go? And that's the title of her book. Because that's the central question which nobody asks.
It was asked once, wasn't it? It was asked once by a news reporter when on a news, and he said they fell down and evaporated.
That's right. That's right. that's the clip with Peter Jennings and George Stephanopoulos, I think is his name. And Peter Jennings said, "Oh, people are asking where did the building go," and Stephanopoulos doesn't really know how to answer. So he just, as you say, he said, "Oh, the building's all fell down and got crushed and it evaporated." You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. I calculated the total length of steel in the World Trade Center. It's 750 miles of steel. You don't get 750 miles of steel evaporating when a building falls down. You know, it just doesn't happen.
Right.
So we've looked at the
rubble pile. There isn't a rubble pile.
Right.
What other evidence is there that they're missing? There's what else did she show? Yeah, the seismic data. There were no earthquake.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I think we'll try and find another picture before we go to the seismic data. If you go down the WTC page, I'll try and let me paste this link in for you because it relates to the point you just made. So I'll go back to the chat window and I'll paste this image in for people to look at. So if you click on that one, and this is good for two reasons, this image, and hopefully when people get that up, they'll see people going down into a hole in the ground. There's a guy on a ladder with a red hat.
Yeah.
And you'll see them going down. Well, this is actually underneath, going down into the basements below the World Trade Center. And you can see there's quite a bit of space down there. So, you know, it's not like these people are actually be able to walk around in that. And you also, if you look very carefully, you'll see there's a big puddle of water. And they're walking in this water. So this is good for two reasons, to debunk some of the myths that have since been spread about what happened. Firstly, again, there's a distinct lack of debris. The basements are not full of debris. Indeed, there are other photographs, I think, on that same page that we've just originally linked, which shows people walking around in the basements. So the debris wasn't there. And also, we've got this pool of water, which is exactly in the same place as these alleged pools of molten metal, which is talked about by, you know, these other... you know, basically, well, disinfo people, I have to put it that way.
So that pretty much proves that the towers didn't fall into the underground basements.
Right, right. So they did, the debris wasn't on the surface, as we've seen. I know we've, gone over that quite quickly, but you can, again, I encourage people to look at the other pictures, which will show them the same story. Yes, there was some. I'm not saying it was all gone. There were some quite long steel beams, and yes, they did take some of them away on trucks. And yes, some of them were cut with torches, and you have the angle cut core columns. Yes, we have those, but they were cut with torches. And if you look hard enough, you'll find the pictures of them, the people with torches who were cutting them. Dr. Judy Wood has shown those pictures in her presentation, so I suggest.
And that's after the buildings were destroyed.
Correct, and that's after the buildings were destroyed, part of the cleanup operation.
Right.
So there are various pictures which people will pull out, such as I call it the angle cut core columns. That gets pulled out. I mean, and I can tell you that the guy who took that picture, I don't know his name, but he was hounded by truthers over that picture and what it showed. He was hounded by them, and that's why he didn't really want his name revealed. Because of the hassle that he got because of that picture he'd taken. And then perhaps I think one of the other key pictures we should look at, I'll paste this in. Well, there's two pictures here.
I've just pasted a train, where the train's undamaged underneath the World Trade Center.
Oh, okay. That's okay then. So let me just click that one. I think I know which one that is. Let me just click
More evidence that the towers didn't fall inside themselves. They just disappeared. It turned
to
dust.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a hard thing to get your head around.
It is.
You know, it is. It's like, what's going on here?
This is something that has never been seen before 9/11, or at least we might get a chance. It had been seen before 9/11, but nobody recognised it. But yeah, the path trains were virtually undamaged. That's another good one. So that these path trains went under the world where the World Trade Center was, and you know, basically these were largely undamaged, and they were able to you know, take some of the trains out, and they rerouted the line and stuff. These tunnels and stuff weren't dug out again, not substantially anyway. They weren't full of debris. So that's the other thing. And then what I'll try and just paste is, if I get this right on here, that image there, and that's the same one you've got, isn't it? Sorry, I've copied and pasted the wrong thing. I want to get the other one, which is, we call it the bubbler image. So let's go back to that. This particular one here, which has got the last part, is bubbler. Again, I show this pitch to people when I'm going through some of the basic things, and I simply ask them a question. Look at that picture, which was taken from a police helicopter on 9/11, showing, I think, tower number one being destroyed. Is that burning up? Can you see huge flames shooting out of it? Can you see large explosions going off? Can you see the building collapsing, or is it a cloud of dust that's forming? You know, yep. So people just need to look at that picture. That's the picture that's on the cover of Dr. Judy Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go? You know, just look at that picture. I mean, that right there tells a good chunk of the story of what actually happened. You know?
Yeah. You've got the spire as well. I've got pictures of that. Let me post the spire.
Yeah, well, if you want to put those in, yeah. I mean, that, again, that's like a, you know, a snapshot of the parts of the steel being turned to dust. It's actually the spire itself is,
Because you can actually see this happening in your eyes.
Yeah.
How tall is that spire to get for people? I mean, it's not just a little spire, is it? It's stories.
It's taller than building number 7. It's about 700 feet tall. So it's about 70 stories. And you can see that's obviously a sequence of images joined together from somebody's camera. But that lasts about 8 seconds. And there's quite a number of videos. In fact, somebody sent me a new video of this either today or yesterday, where somebody's on a boat on the Hudson River, and they were filming the events, you know, while the boat is bobbing along, and they actually filmed the spire sequence as well from the other side, and you can see it turning to dust. So I've seen about probably 7 or 8 different videos of that event, so I know that it's real. And so this is what happened. This steel was turning to dust. So you have to then explore what can turn a steel to dust. Now, we know that a plane crashing into a building doesn't turn steel to dust. And even those who, you know, know that those planes weren't real, we know that an unreal plane, you know, whether it's a hologram or a CGI cartoon, or an image projection, as I like to say that it was, because that's what it was, that can't turn steel to dust. So something else was going on. So,
well, thermite as well. If you look at the thermite thing, because aluminium and steel both turn into dust, when people take the dust samples, they find thermetic material. And it's like, really? Well, because you've just picked up what is essentially dust from the World Trade Center, and it's more cherry picking of the evidence.
Well, that's it. Now let's dwell on that for a minute, Matthew, because I'm just going to just get a, I'm going to get a little image just for people, so that many people will have seen this. But again, it's one of those things that you can look for yourself. I'll just try and get an image of the thermite reaction. So let's just get a quick still image. I mean, Dr. Wood shows videos in her presentation. I've shown videos in presentations. I want to try and get one that's done in daylight. Maybe there we go. Let's just try this one and see if we can get that one right. So this is an example of what the thermite reaction looks like when you see it. I mean, people will have seen this. Actually, I may have closed the wrong window. Okay, where have we gone? I'm just trying to get this picture up, and I've lost the... There we go. So let's see if I can go down this tab again. I'll probably have to sign in again. Okay. So I'm just going to try and put that in the chat window. And there we go. And this is a picture of the thermite reaction. Okay. I just managed to close that tab. There we go. So if you click on that image, you will see what the thermite reaction looks like. Now that's just a, you know, a small pot of thermite, probably about the size of a large plant pot. So that would be enough to maybe dissolve a small steel girder, or not dissolve, that's the wrong word. It would melt through part of a steel girder if it was on that. They actually use thermite to weld rails together, on the railroads and the railways. So you imagine multiplying that by, let's be conservative, 1,000 times. So you imagine that reaction going off 1,000 times, right? Because that's the sort of amount you would need to destroy the amount of the World Trade Center which was destroyed. It's probably actually probably more like 10 or 100,000 times, but we'll be conservative and say 1,000 times. So if you go back to that picture we were looking at with it thing turning to dust, you know.
The bubbler picture.
Pardon?
The bubbler picture.
Yeah, the bubbler picture, the way it turned into dust.
Yeah.
You don't see any trace.
Missing a lot of light, isn't it?
It's missing a lot of yellow, orange light. Similarly, it wasn't a hot nuclear explosion because we were talking about this earlier, weren't we, just before we came on air, that there's this thing going around, there's been a Russian data dump, and they claim that it was a nuclear bomb that went off, and this is shown by this rock underneath the bedrock. Again, it's disinformation. If you look into that story, those pictures of the bedrock, that was during an excavation of the base of the World Trade Center, and what they dug out was an old sunken shipwreck, I think from the 16th century or 17th century or something. And you can see pictures of this. I've got them posted somewhere. So again, if people want to see these pictures, they can write to me for the links, because somebody posted this in our Facebook group the other day. So in other words, the nuke destroyed the towers, these huge structures, but the 16th century shipwreck survived them, according to the logic of these people.
They keep putting so many different stories out, it just keeps muddying the water, so people can argue amongst yourselves, is it nukes, is it thermite, is it, but they never actually say. You know, and it just muddies the water, stops people finding the truth. And the truth, as soon as the truth's been established, we can move on. No one argues whether water's wet because water's wet. You know, as soon as we've got all on the same page, we can do something about it, or hopefully do something about it.
Right. So that's exactly right. And also what's happened with Dr. Wood's research is they say, this is Dr. Judy Wood's theory. This is Dr. Judy Wood's hypothesis. No. It's not her hypothesis and it's not her theory. What she's put together is a collection of evidence which shows you what happened. And then once you know what happened, you go on from there. You know, we haven't got to that part yet. But so we can establish, as she would say, that it wasn't a kinetic weapon or device which destroyed the towers. That's something that, you know, like a bomb, that's a kinetic weapon because it explodes and then chunks go flying. And then, you know, that creates damage to other structures and things. It wasn't that. It wasn't like a wrecking ball either. You know, it wasn't destroyed by a wrecking ball, somebody crashing into it. It wasn't that. And it wasn't a gravity collapse, which was triggered by a fire or some other process, because if the building had been cut into chunks, either by nukes or by thermite or by planes, either of those three, all of those three are completely ruled out because the building was dust before it hit the ground. So let's say that again. Bombs are ruled out, both thermite-type bombs, incendiaries, or RDX, or nukes. Planes as bombs is ruled out because the building wasn't cut into chunks, and those chunks never hit the ground in solid form. So what we need to look for, simply speaking, is some mechanism, a destructive mechanism, which turns things to dust in midair. Right. Now,
well, you've got more proof, haven't you? You've got the no earthquake data, no seismic data when the towers came down.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You're absolutely right, because if you go and look at the seismic charts for 9/11, which Dr. Wood's got on her website. If you go to that original page that I posted and poke around in links from there, in fact, I think it's probably on that page there somewhere. She has got the seismic charts for the day of 9/11. And you can see that these buildings, you know, when they were destroyed, I think one of them was a 2.6 on the Richter scale and one was a 2.3. So this was roughly equivalent to the bottom 20 stories, you know, coming down or being destroyed, well, falling to the ground, basically. So it was the equivalent of the bottom 20 stories which went to the ground. So what happened to the other 90 stories? You know, and you can see on that WTC page, there are some comparisons to this Seattle Kingdome, which was, the Seattle Kingdome was like a big sports stadium in Seattle, and it was destroyed, I think, in 2001, with controlled demolition, you know, planted explosives and so forth. And there's actually a video, there's a really good video of it on the net, and they set up cameras around it, so you can actually see a close range shot of this thing actually being blown up, and the dust cloud comes right past the camera, you know, and shakes and everything. And it's a very good comparison to what happened to the World Trade Center. And the Kingdome, that also had the same seismic signature as the World Trade Center, 2.3.
And so, World Trade Center 7 had no impact, 0.6, yeah, like a jackhammer.
0.6, that's right, that's it, that you got it. But about 0.6 was the recorded seismic signature. And this is in the NIST reports, and that's barely discernible from background. As you say, it's like somebody hitting a hammer on the ground. And if you look at the seismic chart for that event, you can hardly distinguish it from just the background signal that's always there from all the vibrations, you know, created by cars and whatever and stuff like that. So Building 7 also didn't hit the ground in solid form. And what does that mean? Building 7 wasn't a controlled demolition, not in the conventional sense of, you know, planted explosives, which groups like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth are still claiming to this day. They're claiming that Building 7 was a controlled demolition. They're claiming that thermite or nanothermite or thermate was used to destroy the towers because that was what was found in the dust. And as you said earlier, Matthew, if you actually go and, you know, I speak to people, oh, they say, oh, but Andrew, I thought it was thermite. I thought that had been established a few years ago. And I said, look, do you know what thermite actually is? And they'll go, oh, isn't it an explosive? No. Oh, isn't it incendiary? Yes, it is an incendiary. Oh, but do you know what chemicals are in it? Oh, no, I don't know that. And the thermite is made up of two things. It's made up, and there are different types of thermite. You need an oxide, a metal oxide, and aluminium powder. And in the normal sort of regular thermite, it's actually iron oxide and aluminium powder. You mix those two together, obviously fairly freely available, and you put a hot fuse. You need a hot fuse of several hundred degrees centigrade to set it off, so you can't just start it with a match. You need something like a magnesium strip burning to set the thermite reaction going. But what happens is you get molten iron and you get aluminium oxide is formed. It's what they call a redox reaction, oxidation reduction, if anybody's into chemistry, which I was. I did chemistry up until I left school, so I do know a little bit about chemistry. So iron oxide. Well, anyone know what, right? You know what iron oxide is, don't you, Matthew?
Sorry?
You know what the more common name for iron oxide is?
No.
Rust.
Rust. Oh, okay.
So going back to the World Trade Center, what did we have as part of the structure? Well, we had hundreds of steel girders. These steel girders have been standing in air for 30 years, approximately 30 years, perhaps slightly longer even. And what does steel girders do? What do steel girders do when they've been standing in air for 30 years? They rust.
We can also go to the Hutchinson effect for pretty much instant rusting anyway. So even if there wasn't rusting.
Yeah, that's a separate thing though. Yeah, so yeah, you could argue that some of the rust was due to that. That's true actually. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, we'll get perhaps jumping ahead a little bit there. But
yeah.
So the shiny silvery exterior of the World Trade Center was, guess what, folks? It was an aluminium alloy. So for those guys like Stephen E. Jones and Richard Gage to say that thermite was found in the World Trade Center dust, or unreacted thermite. Well, what they're saying, really, and what they're not saying to you, is that the remains of the building were found in the dust of the remains of the building. That's what they're saying. Or what made up the building was found in the remains of the building. In other words, we had iron oxide in the steel girders and in other bits and pieces of metal that would have been in the building, and we had aluminium. So this talk of thermite is a cover story. What they're saying is not untrue, right? So yes, thermite was found in the remains, but it's actually what the building was made of, or at least, you know, not exclusively, but those two substances were present in significant quantities. Now, of course, they will argue, oh, but that's, you know, we know that this wasn't made up from the building because it's got this special signature and we found nanothermite. But they haven't got any evidence for that. They talk about these iron microspheres and this study that they did, but that's actually part of an additional story which we might get to if we have time. So we can now see why the two main reasons why the thermite story was started. The first reason is that they don't want people to know and understand and realize and become aware of that the buildings turned to dust before they hit the ground, because that is a new type of process which has never been seen in public before. At least, well, it was seen probably in 1995, in the Oklahoma City destruction of the Alpha P. Mirai building. But that's perhaps, again, a later story.
I looked into that.
Yeah. So it would appear that the same type of system was used, weapon system was used on the Alpha P. Mirai building, or something similar anyway, and it was used on the Khobar towers in Saudi Arabia the following year in 1996. It appears they used it there as well. So, you know, that's going off the point. So the thermite story was set up because they needed to cover up the justification of the buildings, as Dr. Wood calls it. The second reason was they can sort of make it fly because of what the building was made of, which was the large proportion of iron oxide, or not a large proportion, but a significant proportion that you could measure, a measurable proportion of iron oxide and a significant proportion of aluminium. So those, when they say that thermite wasn't found, they're not actually lying. Technically, they are, in terms of it wasn't really thermite, it was just those two materials happened to be there. But that's how they made it fly.
And the surface wave, so if the towers came down, there would have been an S wave and a P wave?
That's right, yeah. As you say, the surface wave, I forget what the P wave is, I can't remember, Dr. will tell you about all of this. But yeah, basically there's a surface wave which comes along the top and a P wave which goes through the ground. And there was no, if I'm correct on this, I could have got this wrong, but there was no P wave, there was only an S wave. Which means that if there'd been an explosion underground, or the explosive force had had contact with the ground, yeah, it would have had a P wave as well, because that explosive force gets transmitted into seismic energy, transferred into seismic energy and goes into the ground. So that also suggests that whatever it was, the surface wave, you know, was coming from just the process that was happening during the destroying of the buildings. I might have said that slightly wrong, but basically it means because there was no P wave, there wasn't an explosion, not of significant proportions anyway.
No, the wave that were observed, it were like just the towers been removed. As Dr. Yeah. Judy Wood says, if you get off your mattress, the mattress recovers. So the earth would recover from that much weight being removed off it. Because as the towers just get turned to dust, obviously the weight's gone. So the
that's right. Yeah, I think that's it. I think you've got it. What happened there was that because the weight had gone, that actually caused the ground to flex, and that caused a surface wave. So it's like almost a negative explosion, if you will, which I think we should talk about, because a lot of people say, oh, Andrew, you know, you're just talking crap because there were explosions. You know, we've got all these witnesses reported them. You can hear them on the videos. actually, yeah, that second part is not really true, because if you listen carefully to the videos, say, of World Trade Center building number 7 going down, you can hear people's conversations over the, you know, whilst the building is actually, you know, going down, going in a downward direction. You can hear people's conversations. Now, if this thing had been blown up, you would have heard this bang, 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 like that, and you cannot hear this. And you can hear a sort of rumbling sound as the World Trade Center 1 and 2 are destroyed, but it's in no way is it in proportion to the actual size of the building.
There's a famous video of a guy on the phone, and he hears a bang, and you can see him crouch down like there is an explosion. So there are explosions, but Dr. Judy Wood says everything, yes, right, you know, bombs go bang, but everything that goes bang isn't a bomb. So
exactly,
it could have been something else happening that wasn't.
Well, I know that video that you mean. I think it's a firefighter, isn't it? And he's, as you say, he's on a street phone, you know, a pay phone.
That's
on
right,
the street.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's actually very loud explosions. It sounds like almost like very loud gunshots rather than bombs going off, I think. But you could argue that it was bombs. Now, I when I first heard that video, I thought the explosion sounded a bit odd. But let's take it that is a real, you know, video of real explosions. I think it may have been made up, that video, actually, to be totally honest with you. But, because you only hear it in that one video. You don't hear it in any others. But let's take it that, yes, it was a real video. It is valid that it was recorded explosions. We have to explain what the explosions were. And as you just said, you know, just because we've got an explosive sound doesn't mean it was a planted explosive. It could have been, you know, for example, we use the analogy of putting an egg in a microwave oven, you know, switch on the microwave oven, leave it for a minute or two. What are you going to get? You're going to get a boom. Is that egg a bomb? No, it's not. But what's happened is the microwave energy has been transmitted into the egg to heat it up, and the egg explodes because of the heat inside of it. And
the firefighters had oxygen tanks on.
They did. And if you read the accounts, as we have done, you can download, if you want, from my website or the New York Times website, you can download 500 first responder witness accounts, which were taken between, I think, October 2001 and something like, I don't know, March 2002 or something, I can't remember. But if you can see the dates on them all. And you'll find, as you say, firemen reporting explosions going off, both in the towers and, curiously, even a bit harder to explain, they have these things called Scott packs, which are actually oxygen tanks that they use. Obviously, they don't want to get overcome by smoke. So they have oxygen tanks, as people probably know. These are on the backs of the fire trucks, and they were spontaneously exploding. Does that be thermite, do you think, anybody? Thermite,
no,
that they put on the fire trucks? You know, or was it...
Bin Laden and his planes did that.
Yeah, or was it Bin Laden and the hijacked planes that made these oxygen tanks explode? You know? So this is what, going back to cherry-picking evidence, this is what people won't talk about. You know, if you ask Richard Gage about the exploding oxygen tanks and the testimony of those, he'll just say, oh, yeah, that was just, you know, nothing. You know, that's what Judy Wood talks about. We don't talk about that because we don't think it's significant. He won't try and explain it, despite the repeated testimony of that and ones going off in the towers. And what my understanding is that these explosive sounds were just like an oxygen tank. They came from pressurized tanks. So if anybody likes to think for a minute for themselves rather than me tell them, what other pressurized tanks might you find inside the World Trade Center buildings, for example? Can you think of any examples, Matthew?
I know the answer to this because I've watched so much of the Dr. Judy Wood's presentations that the answer is water tanks.
Right.
Because they had to pump water up because they couldn't pump water right to the top of the World Trade Center.
Right.
It was too high. They had to go up in steps. And
that's
so
right,
there's like water reserves halfway up, and then further up there's more water reserves.
Yep. So you have pressurized tanks there with the weight of water, you know, above pressing the water down below. So that's one example. But for example, in a building like the World Trade Center, which had 110 floors, let's say, let's just take an example that we've got 5 fire extinguishers per floor. So we're going to have 500 fire extinguishers or 550 fire extinguishers in the World Trade Center. None of those were found in the rubble. So that means they were all destroyed. What happened to them? Well, if you can imagine a scenario where something is affecting the metal of the building, we've already seen that steel turning to dust. If that process is going on throughout much or, well, in fact, all of the metal in the building, what's going to happen to fire extinguishers, folks?
Well, what turned the tiles into dust? Well, very material specific, wasn't it? Because the paper is unburned. You can paper everywhere, but there's steel and other materials. No toilets, so whatever makes toilets, that's been dustified.
Correct. Yeah, so the paper, as you quite rightly observed, another very important observation. Most people have seen the pictures of the paper, you know, blowing around as the towers are burning, and then later, you know, it's all over the ground when the towers have gone. If you're saying that you've got this huge amount, you know, whatever, 100 tons of thermite, which is what this Danish chemist claims, Niels Harrit, who is basically a liar, because if he's a chemist, like he claims to be, you know, he knows less chemistry than I do, or if he does know the actual chemistry, then he's lying about it, because, you know, we've already covered about the thermite chemistry, for example. He should know that, and Gage should know that as well, but they don't tell you that, because they're liars. No.
And they won't talk about Judy Wood. I remember the interview we did on Red Ash Radio where Henrik brought up Dr. Judy Wood and, it didn't go well.
It did not go well. No, I mean, that's a whole other story that people can read about if they're familiar with Red Ash Radio. And I got hate mail following that, you know, because
I followed that.
You know, so this is what you're dealing with, folks. This is what you're dealing with. I've described this. Once you come to this understanding and knowledge, it's not a theory. It's understanding and knowledge we're talking about here, not theory. We're talking about understanding and knowledge, right? If you want that, it's available. If you want to go round and round in circles and debunk and say it wasn't that, you know, I had somebody writing about this nuke thing, again, the Russian thing we mentioned yesterday, and then I explained to them it couldn't have been that. I sent them all the links, you know, and covered some of the things we've already talked about just now. Sent them the links to... if you look at that rock that's in that picture, it all looks like as if it's melted. But if you look at rock pools, for example, that have had a lot of water erosion in them, that's what that also looks like, that rock in those pictures that are in the article. So I think that's just water erosion, because that area where the World Trade Center was built used to be in the Hudson River at one time. And they built this thing called the Beth Tub, which we haven't talked about, or maybe we mentioned it very briefly, but didn't go into it. That was built around to reclaim some land from the Hudson River. And this bathtub was like this huge concrete, literally a bath tub. And the towers were inside of this. They were inside this bathtub. And the lower area of the World Trade Center towers was 70 feet below the Hudson River. That's where all these mall stores were. They were actually below the level of the Hudson River. And you had this huge, you know, I don't know how many meters thick it was, maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 feet thick or something. I don't know how thick it was. But if that had been breached or cracked in any way, that water would have come in and it would have flooded lower Manhattan. End of, you know. So these supposed nukes that went off in the basement, micro nukes, mini micro nukes, super nukes, nano nukes, whatever nukes they come out with next week nukes, you know, they didn't damage the bathtub. These were, if they're claiming it was explosives, then it was highly selective explosives. And yet they made no sound, they gave off no light, and they didn't damage the bathtub. They didn't create a seismic signature. So all of that is ruled out. So the bathtub, as I say, was built to reclaim land from the Hudson River. So this rock that we're talking about was probably originally on the banks of the Hudson River, so the sea was washing in, it was getting eroded, and that's what's created this, what looks like an apparently molten rock phenomenon, which of course people are immediately thinking was the heat from a nuclear device. It's just nonsense.
The Russian guy that wrote the book, I can't remember his name now.
Karlozov.
Yeah. In his book, he says that the towers was built with the nuclear...
Yeah.
He said they couldn't get planning permission to build a building unless they could work out how to take it down in the future. And so they had to be built with the nuclear detonation in place. So when they wanted to build them down, they could. So
That's why he says that's the reason why that's why they came down using nuclear explosions, because they already had them in place. And it's like the Sears building in Chicago also had the same nuclear device underneath it when it was built. And there's a news report on 9/11 saying that they're evacuating the Sears building, and he uses that as evidence to suggest that it were nuclear that brought it down. But yeah, no broken bathtub.
Exactly. And, you know, this guy wrote to me, because when he produced this 26 part video series, I think it's about, I don't think it's about 9 hours long or something. And I think it's been on and off the internet. Oh, please watch my video series. I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched about, first hour.
I got to part 10.
Yeah, I think I maybe got to somewhere around there. And I realised that he was missing a lot out, the stuff we haven't even talked about yet, which is just completely off the radar screen of any stories of nukes or anything like that. When I asked him what about the bathtub, what this, you know, because it doesn't matter, you know, you mentioned there how this, he alleges that the World Trade Center was built with the nukes in it. That's kind of irrelevant whether it was put in it when it was built or put in later. Because it still had to go off to destroy the buildings, so whenever it was put, it's still going to create a seismic signature. It's still going to create heat. It's still going to create light. None of those things are seen, and we don't have a high level of radiation either. You know,
it was still going to break the bathtub.
It was still either broken it or affected it or damaged it in some way. You know, but he didn't even know what the bathtub was, for heaven's sake. So that's why he didn't include the explanation in his. He didn't include it in his explanation. And then the guy, when I wrote to him, he wrote to another chap I know called Abraham Hafiz Rodriguez, and he wrote to Abe that he'd written to me, and then I changed my mind about the nukes, and I agreed with him, with Karlozov. That's what he wrote to Abe. So that's a bull-faced lie. That is just a lie. So why does this guy need to lie? You know, if he's allegedly telling the truth, you know, because I don't like to tell the truth, you know.
Let's move on. Let's talk about, everyone talks about building 1 and 2, and building 7 is the smoking gun, but there's other buildings that are equally, if not more interesting. Building 4 and building 3 and building 6.
Right. I mean, Dr. Wood would be better to talk about these, but I can cover them a little bit. And for example, building number 4, World Trade Center building number 4. I think that was the 8-story building. I tend to get 4 and 6 mixed up as to the exact height and everything.
Six is the one with the scoop out of it, and 4 is the...
That's right. Yeah, 4 got cut in half. Yeah, so basically if you look at the pictures of building 4, half of it disappeared and the other half was just badly damaged. But it's literally like somebody had cut through it, like you cut through a slice of cake. It's literally like that, you know. So how do you explain that? It's unbelievable. Yeah. And as you said, building number 6, it's like the whole central section has gone. There's a big circuit hole in the middle of it. I don't know, maybe what, 70, 80 feet in diameter. I forget the exact dimensions. And if you look down, you have aerial photos of this. I think it's probably on that page we've already linked. Let's see if I can find it while we're on the subject. You can see that there's virtually no debris in the middle of it. You know, so the whole center section of this building has gone, yet there is no debris in the middle of it. So where did this debris go? This building also appears to have largely been turned to dust as well. Well, the centre of it certainly, not so much the outside. So,
and it's evidence more evidence that lack of explosives, because they didn't use explosives to bring the rest of it down. They had to pull it down by ropes because they were too scared to break the bathtub.
Exactly. So in other words, if they didn't want to use explosives to destroy the remains of what was there, just clean up the site and so on and shift it all away, then how can it possibly have been that they used explosives in a controlled demolition manner for the rest of it? You know, for the main part of it, which is the horrible events which transpired, you know? Yeah, again, if you look at the whole segment of this WTC page, I'll just put this window in the chat if I've got them soon. I haven't accidentally closed it again like I did before. And reconnect to that.
That's a page. That's a picture. Some of these pictures are too big. They're not boxing into the chat window. They're too huge.
Right. Yeah, well, I've just been pasting the links so people can click on the links, hopefully.
Okay, yeah.
But again, the top right of that, is building number six. And you can see for the amount of building that's gone, there's very little debris in the bottom. This is actually clearer from ground level because there's another building, another picture of that building. I think I'll try and paste the link so that people can look at it. So you can see from ground level, you know, what that actually looks like. And there's really not a lot left. So we've got building number six. I'm not sure if we've got pictures of building number four on this page. I think there are some somewhere on the site. But Dr. Wood's got those in her presentation. So, you know, you can look at those there. I'm trying to find the other one. I've gone too far down, I think.
So it went every single, any building with a WTC prefix got damaged or destroyed or evaporated.
Correct. So let me just get that one up there. Yeah, that's image 301. So you can see again, we've got six or seven stories down to sort of less than one story. I'll just paste that link there. So how are you pasting them into the window then, Matthew? Do you just kind of write?
I'm a member, so I've joined this place. So when I click, it just posts the thumbnail, and you're.
Yeah, I've just put as a guest, right? Fair enough. Yeah, well, at least people can see it. So building number six, you can look at that as well. Again, the other groups don't really talk about that very much. They mainly talk about one, two, and seven. And of course, they've just had that huge billboard in Times Square that they paid £600,000 for. $600,000. Where did they get that money from? You know, it's a lot of money. You know, we don't have that sort of money, you know.
No. You don't have dodgy looking logos neither.
No. Not ones with planes in them, you know.
No.
So, that's a whole other story. Yeah. So building number four cut in half, building six scooped out of it, building one, two and seven completely destroyed, turned to dust. Building five is the one with the 24-foot circular holes. It's just below building six with the big holes in the middle. It's again, that building number five is below there, and you'll see the circular holes there, which are one of them is, I think, 24 feet in diameter. So what's going on there, everybody? And then there is also one of the other buildings which was damaged slightly, was Bankers Trust. Who's heard of that building? You know, who's heard of the Bankers Trust building? Nobody talks about that. But that building is very strange because if you go down on this WTC page again, if anybody's got that open, let's see where it is. Yeah. Figure 71 onwards, you've got some pictures of the Bankers Trust building. And you can see, if you look at figure 73, I'll just paste it in. Yeah. Let's just get that image up. You can paste the link for that in. Excellent. Yeah, that's the link for the page, yeah. And then, great.
That's the image you just posted there.
If you look carefully at that image, you'll see, you'll think, there's a lump of, Dr. Judy Wood calls these wheat checks. The thing that's hanging down, dangling down off the bottom. And you kind of think, you know, when you first look at that picture, that somehow this wheat checks has flown across from the World Trade Center, smashed into the Bankers Trust building, then fallen down and created that huge gash. But think about that for a moment. Think about that. How would such a thing have the energy to do all of that damage? And not only that, but look carefully at that damage. That is not damage of an impact. You can actually see that some of those beams are bent outwards.
You can zoom right in on that image if you click on it.
Yeah, you can.
Wow.
And we've got, I think, I don't know if it's on that half page, we've actually got a picture. I don't think it's on this page, it's elsewhere. We've got a picture taken inside the building looking out where that gash was. And that is also a very interesting picture because you can see these steel girders, I mean, you can see it pretty much on that picture if you zoom in. It looks like those steel girders have melted. Huh? How is that possible? Because if you go and read the FEMA report for that building, they reported no fire in that building. No fire in the Bankers Trust building. So how is that possible? Look at the damage to the windows and stuff like that. This is all very, very strange. And then you can go and research, if you wish, separately, up to you how much you want to research this, but you can research the story of the Bankers Trust building. Because later on, after 9/11, I think by about July 2006, it's not on this page, but I think it's elsewhere on Dr. Wood's site, the Bankers Trust building was repaired. And, you know, they fixed up all that damage that you see there in that image we just looked at, replaced all the windows and everything. And then in 2006, they declared the Bankers Trust building had got a mold infection. And they decided that the building needed to be taken down piece by piece, which they did. And it took, I think, about 5 years. And it is now, I think, when I went to New York in 2008, when I was able to verify, by the way, that the towers are no longer there, because some people seem to have difficulties with that one, the Bankers Trust was about halfway down, I think, when we were there. They got down to about 20 stories. But it's now been taken down piece by piece. And there were some unusual fires in that building as well. Whilst it was being, there was one incident where three people were killed in the dismantling exercise. It wasn't really a demolition as such. The building was dismantled piece by piece. So why do you repair a building and then take it down piece by piece? Why would you want to do that?
Dr. Judy was got an image of the beam that's rusting, and I'm trying to look for it. I can't find it anywhere. So I'll just have to accept I can't find that.
Yeah. I mean, the website, drjudywood.com, that rusting beam is actually figure 104 on the WTC page. Actually, now I've just scrolled down.
104.
Yeah, I'll paste you the link and then people can look at that if you want, because this rust issue we've already touched on briefly. You know, we can talk about that a little bit more.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, so this is Bankers Trust after they're repairing it. This is...
Correct. This is why
they fixed it.
Yeah.
And then they took it back down.
So this, I believe, I don't know whether this is, I can't remember whether this is in the, I think this is when they were taking it down, I think judging by the state of it, but I'm not 100% sure, but I think it must be when they were taking it down. But anyway, you can see there that this beam is rusting very heavily in the middle, the central one right in the middle. And we found a number of images from things around the World Trade Center where we've got quite a high level of rust. I think there may be more on this page. Things seem to have rusted very rapidly, just after the destruction of the World Trade Center. More than you would expect. There's a, I don't know if it's on this page, but there's a picture of a truck, a Coca-Cola truck, and the front of it is all rusted, but the rest of the truck looks in fairly good shape. And this was taken on the 13th of September or something. Or maybe the 18th, I'm not sure. But, Dr. Judy Wood knows about these sorts of materials, and we know ourselves, for example, how quickly certain things rust. Stainless steel doesn't rust that quickly. It does rust, but it doesn't rust that quickly. So we're starting to build...
It's an isolated beam, though. So it's unique. Yeah. That beam is just like the only one that's rusting.
It's the only one that's rusting to that amount. You can see the bit of rust on the other ones, but this is much more heavily rusted, like it's been, in the bottom of the ocean, as I think, as Dr. Wood has said on other rocks. In fact, no, I've got the picture of the truck. It is here. It's figure number 100. This is the one that I was thinking of. I'll just paste that in the chat window as well. Figure number 100 on the WTC.
Oh, yeah. That's
the one there. So it's that one. And you can see there's these two squaddies standing in front of it. And you can see if you look right at the back of the truck, looks to be in relatively good shape. But the actual front of the truck, it's all kind of looks sort of half melted, and it's really not in such good condition. And the actual cab is in fairly poor condition, but the actual behind it, where they've got all the storage space, the trailer, whatever you want to call it, that's in pretty good shape. So this itself is a bit of a problem. The glass has gone from the front, Yeah. And I encourage
people... That leads on to cars, really. There's 1,400 of these damaged cars. This isn't just one isolated incident. The cars are like as far away as a quarter of a mile away were getting damaged.
That's right. And you can go a little way down on the WTC page to find some more images. In fact, the one that's there is a fairly good one. There are others. But you know, I encourage people to look at these people. I encourage people to look at these pictures in detail. Study, you know, study the windows, study the door handles. You know.
There we go. So here's an example of a dodgy car. Right, we've got a car here that's half damaged and half pristine. If you like, put your hand over one half of it, it looks like a new car. And the unmelted roof, the unmelted plastic lights on the roof.
Yep. That's a pretty good picture. And we've got several pictures of that, different angles. And this, I think I'm pretty sure this is on FDR Drive. This car, which is about half a mile away now. Sorry.
This is an image that's been used to debunk Dr. Judy Wood, because it's this car, I think, has been found elsewhere, and it's been moved from somewhere to here, and people say, well, look, you're saying it's been found there, and look, like that. Irrelevant. Look at the car. Whatever happened to that car, it shouldn't have happened like that. So if it happened here, or it happened underneath the World Trade Center, it wouldn't matter. It's,
You make a very good point, and you know, just to clarify that a little bit, that people will claim that the toasted cars on FDR Drive were towed there after the events. You know, first question is, why would you tow a car onto FDR Drive? Why would you do that? And we can't prove that they weren't towed, or we can't prove that all of them weren't towed, but we know that some of them weren't towed, because we have images of not here, not of FDR Drive, but there's a parking lot image. This is in Dr. Judy Wood's book. I don't think it's on the website. The website, by the way, is kind of like a filing cabinet. The website was developed over a number of years before the book was written, because Dr. Judy Wood, she realized she had a lot of important information and she wanted to make it public. So the website is fairly kind of like, it's like a filing cabinet. You know, it's sort of sorted a little bit, but it's not sorted in the optimum manner. There's not a lot of explanation there. There's only a few captions and stuff. There are a few articles that you can read and stuff like that. So if you want to criticize Dr. Judy Wood's website, fine, you know, criticize it. If you think it's a bit hard to follow, then that you're probably right. That's probably fair criticism. But it was designed as a filing cabinet and designed for things like coming on podcasts, you know, so that we've got an easy storage space to access some of these pictures and so on for discussion. So that's just to get that point out of the way. So we do know that
if you've got information, get the information out. Don't say, I'm going to come out and say, because they can whack you, and then you're not coming out and saying nothing. You know, dead men don't talk. So get your information out, and then if you get whacked after that, it's validation that your information's correct, if you know what I mean. And then they've got
campaign. Kind of, right. I mean, it's macabre to think about it, but of course we do know that it happened to certain people. There's actually, in fact, what I'll try and do is, because I know the way that I know, sorry, where I know that image is available is we were gonna have a break at some point, weren't we, and play this track.
We went straight through the break.
That's all right. No, I don't mind. But what I wanted to just do is, because they're going back to this toasting car image, there's a video that was created by Charlie Pound. And his friend, and I'll get the video URL so people can look at it. It's only 3 minutes long. This is a song we were going to play, and if you watch, Charlie Pound has done an absolutely excellent job on this video. And again, I'll paste the link. And in that, if you watch that video, you will see in it an image of the parking lot with the cars in a normal state, and then the next frame of the video you will see that the cars are still in the parking lot and they've been completely toasted. All right, so they haven't moved. And there's a
black car that turns white, isn't there?
I can't remember the exact colours, but you'll see it in this video. If you know, you can pause it and look at it and look at the two images. These images are in Dr. Wood's book. I haven't got the references to hand. Again, if people want to get the exact images, I'll try and find them. You just need to email me through the website, checktheevidence.com, and I will try and find those images if you want to, find them for yourself.
Okay, I've got a question there. You know, I'll let you read it.
Okay.
It's directed to you anyway.
Yep. Rick said he thinks it could be a high-energy weapon and explosives in the building all at once, both because we do have firemen and video-controlled demolition flashes and explosives. Yeah, well, we've been through all that. this person, whoever's typed this, doesn't seem to have been listening. We already did all of that. The boom, boom, boom of explosions was almost certainly exploding tanks. It wasn't controlled demolition because it's not supported, but yeah, and the oxygen tanks, which were on the fire trucks. We don't know if any oxygen tanks exploded while they were on the guys back in the towers. That may well have happened. It might have killed them, in which way we don't have. It wasn't both. There was no need to have explosives in the towers because all of the destruction was done with the system. You know, this is the kitchen sink approach. If there was explosions, you would have had, if there were bombs going off of sufficient size, you would have seen that as seismic effects. We didn't see that. We didn't see that. The building wasn't cut into chunks. You know, we say this, if it sounds like there's frustration in my voice, it's because there is. However many times you say this, people have been brainwashed by the 9/11 truth movement.
And Stephen E. Jones.
And put into this talk of bombs. I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm being, you know, shirty with people, but we've been talking about this, right, for 7 years. 7 years. Yeah, but we talked about the angle cut core columns. That was oxyacetylene torches on the ground. We don't have any angle cut core columns from high up in the towers because all of those columns were turned to dust. You can actually see that in the videos. I know you're not saying it is real. I know you're not saying Judy Wood is. Yeah, you can say both if you want, but it's not supported by the evidence. He's typing in the chat window. So
yeah, there was a degree of rubble left behind, and then that had to be removed, didn't it?
We've already covered that. We've already covered that.
Yeah, what people say is the thermite cutting is them removing the rubble away. So they had to go in, cut it out. And then, you know, the steel beams that did get shipped out is the remainder, the little tiny piece that was left behind.
Right.
Now, not the actual destruction of the towers.
Right. If I just may emphasize that, we said earlier on that approximately 80% of the buildings were turned to dust, right? So that leaves us with approximately 20 stories which weren't turned to dust. So you're still going to have a substantial proportion of steel beams that you need to do something with. Right. So you're still going to need to cut those up in some way. All right. And it's certainly possible, right, that they used some thermite to cut up those beams while they were on the ground after the towers were destroyed. Right.
Yep. After the day.
Yeah. So you can talk about bombs and explosives. You can talk about nukes if you want. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. But we all know about bombs. We all know about nukes. We've heard about them since we were at school. Right? What you're seeing and what the pictures show you is a new process, one which has never been seen before. All you have to do is look at the videos and look at some of the pictures we've shown you tonight. You can see that process in action before your very eyes, right? Now, just to digress slightly, but still on this theme, since we started pointing this out, somebody called Simon Shack has started saying, all, and I do mean all, the videos and photographs of the events of 9/11 are fake. Now, why would somebody like Simon Shack want to say that all, and I do mean all, the videos and photographs are fake? He says...
He's the guy behind September Clues, yeah?
Correct. 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 If it is correct that these buildings turn to dust and we have videos of them, and that's the thing that has to be covered up, what better way to say that all the videos are fake and we had actors making up, you know, all the accounts and witnesses? This is what Simon Shack says, and other people have said the same thing and followed him. Now, this has become a huge problem. I actually had a friend who believed this, and Simon Shack claims, for example, that Judy Wood's study is unreliable because she relies on video evidence, photo evidence, for her conclusions. Well, Simon Shack appears to have forgotten some of the things we haven't yet covered. For example, one thing we have covered is the seismic evidence. That's not images or video. The other thing is weather reports, which we haven't even got to yet. That's in Dr. Judy Wood's book.
She was looking at the smoke coming up, wasn't she? Not the smoke, because the smoke implies fire. She was looking at fumes coming up. Yeah. And she took a satellite, looked at the satellite photos, and on the satellite photos, she saw the weather effects. of that day.
Absolutely. You know, I'm glad that you've studied this so well, Matthew. And it's actually fairly straightforward stuff. I'll see if we can find that picture of the fuming. It might
not
be on this.
I've got barking in my area. I don't, everyone can hear my dog barking. I'm trying to walk away from it, but I want to be near my computer. So I'm walking back to the phone.
The canines, you know, they do, and the cats. I've got a cat on my knee, but he's very sleepy. He's 19 years old, so he's very sleepy. Right, let's go to this picture because you've skillfully brought us to this subject. Okay, so that image, if people want to click on that, is one of the images that Dr. Judy Wood was investigating, because she was interested in trying to find out a bit more about this fuming, because we don't want to say the towers were smoking, because that implies fire. Yes, there was some fire. We saw some fire. We're not saying there was no fire, you know, and we're not saying there were no explosive sounds. I don't think there were any bombs, but I do think there were explosive sounds. I know there were because, you know, we can hear them on some videos, and we've got multiple witness reports of them. So it's commonly put around the internet that Judy Wood denies explosions, and she denies this and she denies that. All you have to do is look at what's in the contents page of her book. Again, anybody wants a scan of that, it's on my website. I've recently had to reiterate this again to people because it's been claimed again by Richard Gage and Dane Wigginton that she doesn't cover this evidence. She does. It's on the website. It's all in her book. So it's yet another lie by members of the 9/11 truth movement.
An explosion that burned paper, and there's no paper burnt. The paper don't burn in this world of World Trade Center world.
That's right. The World Trade Center explosives don't burn the paper. So what's going on? Molten metal, again, is another claim. Oh, Judy Wood denies molten metal. Not true. What is denied is that it was significantly hot. That is what is denied, right? We don't say that the firemen that reported molten metal were lying. What we do suggest is that that metal was not hot, because this is another process that we're looking at, part of which is dustification, and there are other strange effects which, again, we might get onto.
Well, the effects lingered, didn't they? The dustification happened, but the effects continue to carry on, because they claimed that the people, the rescue workers, are walking across the hot rubble and melting the steel toe caps, because they keep having to bring these boots in because these boots keep getting melted. And so they keep having to replace the boots for the workers. But yet, you don't hear cases of burnt feet. It's just like...
Something else. You're absolutely right, Matthew, because the workers were claiming that the boots were melting. You know, we've got that famous video clip, and Dr. Wood plays this in one of her presentations. So again, she doesn't deny it. She played that in her Madison 2007 presentation. Again, if people want to find that, I can give them links if they can't find it themselves. I've got links on my website. And if you've got something that's hot enough to melt rubber boots, and you're standing on it for any length of time, in minutes, you're going to get burnt feet. Yeah. You're going to get burnt feet. No reports of any burnt feet. You know, something else is going on here. Something else is going on. We're looking at a different type of process which is affecting these things. I want to go back to the image of the fumes coming up, because that image that says browse at the end, the one I just pasted. I think you've maybe reposted it, haven't you? Yeah, we haven't talked about the hijackers and the planes. We might have time to get to that, but we can talk about that another time. I've got a whole page about this that people can look at if they want, which mentions some of that as well.
Trade Center for today.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So we've got this picture with the sort of white fume cloud going up. So what's that? This is what Dr. Wood was investigating. Why we've got this sort of faint, darker cloud, which is kind of drifting slightly to the, let's get my compass right, to the northwest. And then you've got this white cloud, which is actually going southwest. And then there's got like a dog leg in it. She was interested in that. So if you go down that WTC page a little bit further...
There's two different types of fumes coming off. This is not just one type. There's not just white. If you look if you zoom in on that image, you can see the darker fumes coming out.
That's right,
yeah.
It's a little bit indistinct, but it is there. You can actually see it fairly clearly, you know, if you study it. I've done it again, haven't I? I keep closing the wrong thing. Oh, no, I haven't. It's there. I'm not being such a dipstick this time. And that's what she found. She was looking for these images, and that's what Dr. Judy would have found. She didn't find that until about February 2008, when she made that discovery. Why was nobody talking about this, everybody? And this image, if you zoom in on it, you will see that you've got Long Island, right? You've got the hurricane, obviously. This was taken on 9/11.
Have you posted an image?
Oh,
okay.
It's in the chat window.
Wow. Oh, wow.
That's the one.
And then if you look over to the left of the image on the coastline, obviously, you've got like that sort of, I don't know what to call it. It looks like a sort of finger or a finger coming out, big sort of finger sort of pointing. And that's actually Long Island. And then you've got that hook.
I've got an image actually where it highlights where it is. Let me paste that in.
Okay, if you've got that, great. Yeah, stick that in. And you've got Long Island, and then you've got just at the sort of western end of Long Island, you've got you can see the plume from the World Trade Center. This was on 9/11. This is another thing that Richard Gage won't talk about, or David Ray Griffin, or Webster Tarpley, or in fact, hardly anybody will talk about this evidence.
Well, the Hurricane Erin.
Hurricane Erin. Hurricane Erin.
Well, Hurricane Erin's, the implications of Hurricane Erin are huge.
It's huge.
It means complete mass manipulation of media because there were no coverage. It means weather manipulation because there were no coverage, so there were no fear of it doing anything other than they wanted it to do. Unbelievable implications of the Hurricane Erin.
And what I want to highlight to people is Judy would have went on to the Power Hour. That's Joyce Riley's program a couple of years ago, and we've got a recording of this. And she pointed out the hurricane stuff, and a caller came in and accused her of lying, said that this hurricane didn't exist because Hurricane Erin was a 2004 hurricane, and you know it went nowhere near New York. And Joyce Riley let this hang for about 30, 40 minutes on her program before she actually corrected herself. And it's easy to find out that the name Hurricane Erin was not retired. It was not retired. And what I want to show people, which is to me one of the most important pieces of 9/11 evidence there is, because it begins to join things up a little bit with other fields of research, is that image right there. That's the track of Erin. I'd like people to take a good look at that. And again, go and find other versions of it. There are three or four different versions from different weather centres. I know that the Canadian Hurricane Data Centre has a copy of this, which looks...
These are all official images, aren't they? These are all from all the weather proper... You can still get them today if you go to proper...
Yeah, you just need to go to the right archive. Some of them have moved around since these images were first posted in 2008. But they're mainly still there. You just need to look for them. So let's dwell on that for a moment. Because we've got Hurricane Erin was first named as a hurricane or as a tropical storm, I think.
Oh, yeah, it got renamed, didn't it? It's the largest hurricane of 2001, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah. There's various measures that you can go by. There's obviously the category, which became a Category 3 storm. So it was fairly big. There's also the physical, you know, width of it. But the peculiar things are, if you look at this data, started as a tropical storm, 1st of September. It was the most studied hurricane. Dr. Judy Wood's got a whole page about this on her website. You can go and look at all the references. They had about 7 or 8 teams of scientists studying this hurricane, you know, with aircraft and radar measurements and so forth. And the hurricane actually hit Bermuda on the 7th of September, and it was reported on CNN as doing a bit of damage there. You know, it's quite a powerful storm. I don't think anybody was killed or anything like that, but it was a fairly powerful storm. And after leaving Bermuda, you can see, if you look at that image, that track that I've put the link for, it went in a straight line. And what do you know? It was going, CNN said it wasn't going to be a problem. It was because it was going out to sea. Yep. It was going out to sea from Bermuda, but it was going out to the direction of New York City. And guess where it was? Well, 8 o'clock in the morning on 9/11, that's September 11th, 2001, folks, the hurricane was closest to New York City at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, you couldn't see the hurricane from New York City. You could see, if you look at that original image we posted, you could see the outer bounds of the northwest section of the hurricane touching Cape Cod. So you would have probably been able to see into the storm system from there. But you couldn't really see it from New York City. All three New York airports reported what's called dry thunder. So there wasn't any sort of, rain and a lot of visible lightning, but they reported the sound of thunder. So the influence of the storm reached as far as New York City's electrostatic field. Oh, did I say electrostatic field? Yes, I did say electrostatic field, because that's where you start to begin to explore another part of what really happened. And this is what happened, folks. This is a hurricane that happened. You probably haven't heard about it, unless you've listened to some of the talks that Dr. Wood has given or some of the talks that I've given. You will not have heard about this hurricane because two of the news networks in the morning reported it and two of them didn't. And I've got a video showing that footage on my YouTube channel. And again, anybody wants links, write to me and I'll send you them. You know, so we don't take it forever to post everything and do it in the course of this chat. So,
it's just unbelievable. There's like, right. if the hurricane was that close, I mean, like 50 miles away, it would be all over the news. And it's absent. The absence speech, it just speaks loud. It's volumes. It's deafening. The absence of it.
I mean, again, just compare it to Hurricane Sandy, which I think was what it was 2012, wasn't it? In fact, yeah, it was. I think it was October 2012, Hurricane Sandy. That was a Category 1 storm, and it blew into New York a little bit, and it was all over the news. I mean, we even heard about it here, you know, when it's like 3,000 miles away. It's all over the news, and that was a Category 1 storm that just got to New York. You know, this one was going for 4 days in a straight line towards it. They didn't evacuate, no evacuation orders, no nothing. There's nothing. So why was there no real significant coverage of it? I'm not saying there was no coverage of it. There was some, right? You can go and find some of it. And I've got a video where they do mention it. But then the guy just says, oh, don't worry about that. It's going away. He literally says that.
You know? They downclassed it to a tropical storm.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they did later. But you can see from that track that what it did do is made a very sharp right-hand turn and went off out towards Newfoundland. Only happened to be on the 12th of September. So, in other words, folks, the movement, to just state that as clearly as I can, the movement of this storm system was coincident with the events of 9/11. So, to use that language again, either this movement of this storm was a coincidence or it wasn't a coincidence. So you have to decide for yourselves, when you've checked all of this for yourselves, what you think, whether it was a coincidence or whether it was not a coincidence. I suspect...
Well, so this is all missed by everybody else in truth movement. There's no 9/11 truths talking about this.
Nope.
And there's another, I've just posted another picture into chat window now that talks about something else that's never ever mentioned, and that's the magnetic field.
Oh, yes.
I'll let you take that.
Right, yes, so that's a good one, of course, because Dr. Wood had started to work out that energy was involved, right? Energy is involved in this in some way. And this is where she started talking about this energy weapon. And we can get onto that a little bit now, because people will say, oh, ray beams from space, that's just ridiculous. You know, you're going to discredit the truth movement by talking about that. Well, actually, folks, Dr. Judy Wood has never said ray beams from space. It was a certain Professor Stephen E. Jones who started
to use language like that.
Mr. Thermite himself, who we haven't really spoken about yet. And perhaps we will in due course, but let's stay with this idea of energy for the time being. And, well, Energy. Well, what forms of energy are there? Well, we've got heat energy. Well, we've looked at the evidence so far and unburned paper, liquid water in the bottom of the towers where they're supposed to have been molten metal. It's not really heat energy that's involved here. No building breaking into chunks. No real evidence of bombs going off, really. Not the normal types of bombs. Explosive sounds, yes. Bombs, no. So what other energy? Well, we've seen this thing called the magnetic field trace that Matthew's put up. And we've talked about a hurricane, which has, yes, it has wind energy and stuff like that, but it also has electrostatic field associated with it. So what we've got is magnetic fields in the form of this graph, which we haven't properly discussed yet, and electrostatic fields. What's that leading us towards, I wonder? Well, let's talk about the magnetic field, shall we? I think you've put in that other good picture there, Matthew. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I have.
And we'll get a zoom in of that. Because this is an amplified trace of the Earth's magnetic field, which was measured by 6 different instruments run by the University of Alaska. And they're called magnetometers. They measure the
Hello?
Going up and down a little bit. But then during the events of 9/11, which are over on the right-hand side there, these things go haywire. These things go haywire. So something very odd.
This is just one measuring station. This is 6 measuring stations.
Correct. This is 6 different instruments. One of them, I think, was a minute slower than the others. If you look at the traces, you can see it's actually a minute out. And I want to get up another image, let's see if I can find that, which is related to this, because it's like a zoomed in portion of that trace that you posted there. Let's see if I can just get that one. I do know the actual thing. Let's just go down. Where have we gone?
Maybe so whoever did 9/11 had to be able to move hurricanes around and affect the Earth's magnetic field at the same time, like in a cave with a satellite phone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, apparently I've heard there's an app for that now.
I want it.
maybe I shouldn't joke, because obviously this is deadly serious, but this means something very unusual is going on, and it's easy to cover up because people think, for example, that if you talk about bombs or thermite and stuff like that, that explains the evidence. Well, how do thermite, nukes, bombs, you know, super thermite, nanothermite, how does that explain the presence of a hurricane? How does that explain, and I'm still trying to find the graph that I want, because it's much more clear.
Well, the dips in the magnetic field is you've got when the first plane hits the building, it dips first, then the second right. plane hit, it dips, and then it's haywire all day, and right till 5:20 when the building 7 comes down, and then it just goes back to normal.
Right.
So it's as a description of it for anybody who's not looking at this image, it's just like you've got normal waves going across, and then the magnetic field goes nuts when the first plane hits the building. So a plane hitting a building affects the Earth's magnetic field.
Right. So what I want you folks to narrow us down on, this is like a zoomed in portion. And what Dr. Wood did is she downloaded the raw data from these magnetometers and she put it into an Excel spreadsheet. And she generated these graphs, because then you can rescale it and you can make the traces have a much more, you can exaggerate the vertical scale. That's what I'm trying to say, so you can see the data more clearly. And if you look at that particular one, you'll see at the top we've got the time, which is the text for the time is actually oriented vertically. So you'll see if you look at the very top left of the picture, you'll see 8:15 a.m.
8:15 it starts, yeah.
Yeah, 8:15 that trace starts, and it goes across to the right-hand side. That's 1 hour of trace, and this is from 9/11/01. In fact, it says it in red text, and I'm not reading it. It says 9/11/01, 8:15 a.m. to 9/11/01, 9:15 a.m. These are the values from the magnetic field. You can see that this deflection of the Earth's magnetic field, this divergence, started around about 8:15, and it carried on and reached a minimum point at 8:46, and then it kind of sort of recovered and went back the other way, and then it kind of reached the maximum at where that brown line is, around about 9:03, 9:04, it started just to go down again. So, anyone know what happened at 8:46 on 9/11? It was when this alleged first plane struck. The alleged first plane struck. So, what does this mean, folks? Do you think that a plane crash, do you think a computer animation, computer animated plane can affect and make a hole in the towers and it can affect the Earth's magnetic field as measured 3,500 miles away, which is where these instruments were? I suggest to you that, I put it to you that we're looking at something off the charts of your current experience and knowledge if you've not been studying some of this separately. We're talking about energy effects. All of the evidence points to energy effects, and none of it points to traditional explosives and nukes and bombs and thermite and any variation of that. And let's just say, for the sake of it, let's be generous. Let's say somebody planted a couple of bombs, you know, just to, so that they could set up the truth movement afterwards, which is what they've done. Then that doesn't really matter, because we all know about bombs. Yeah, so what? Somebody planted a bomb. You know, people plant bombs every day. They do it in Afghanistan, these roadside bombs. We know all about all of that stuff. You can talk about that if you want. That's, if you want to just discuss that, that's fine. But I'm more interested, for example, in who's actually controlling the weather. Who's got this technology that can do this with energy? Who owns that? Who sanctioned this? Right? And we're not going to find that out unless you start talking about the evidence, first of all. Right? So that's where I am on 9/11. If it sounds like I'm being belligerent, then hopefully, you know, I've got good reason for being belligerent, because other people just want to talk about this inconsequential stuff. But this is the real evidence, and it's what you need to develop a real understanding of 9/11. Where do you want to go from there, Matthew?
Well, let's tie it all together, right? So if it's, we've ruled out thermite for sure. We've ruled out nukes. We've ruled out Bin Laden and his cell phone. Mm-hmm. So let's have a talk. There's a guy in Canada called John Hutchinson. So let's move on to him and his experiments. And he started, what, 70s, I think he started doing his experiments?
That's right. Now, we're sort of taking a slight jump sideways here, but we're going to see, you know...
Well, we've got like 15 minutes left, I think, on my clock.
Okay.
So if we can just...
Oh, yeah,
just,
yeah,
So let's just let people get somewhat, like, so give them an understanding of what type of energy was used. So it's like, give them a working theory.
What we're talking about, I've talked already about electrostatic field in a hurricane. Electrostatic energy is like when you stroke your cat and you get a shock off it, or, you know, you stop your car at a petrol pump, you touch the petrol pump, you get a spark. What's happened is your car has collected electrostatic energy, collected electrons, and then you're discharging when you touch the pump or you touch the roof of your car or the door or whatever. Same around a hurricane. You've got this huge electrostatic field, or any thunderstorm. Everyone knows that. I mean, what creates lightning, for heaven's sake? It's electricity. Everyone knows there is electricity associated with a storm system. We've also talked about the magnetic field. Well, guess what? John Hutchinson, as you introduced there, is a Canadian researcher. He has been doing research into mixing together different forms of energy, such as electrostatic fields from a Van de Graaff generator or from a Tesla coil. And he's been mixing together magnetic fields from large magnets and this sort of thing. And he's also mixed together microwave energy using microwave generators. It's called a magnetron tube, if anybody didn't know that. And he used radar equipment. And he started fiddling around with this because he was trying to reproduce some of Nikola Tesla's experiments and getting equipment together. He's just a tinkerer. You know, he's not a trained physicist. He hasn't been to university. He hasn't, you know, worked in a university laboratory. He's just got an intuitive feel for inventing things, collecting things together. I've spoken to John at length. Because of we haven't had time to cover, but I'll mention it very briefly now. Because we knew that this was correct, a lot of this evidence was submitted to court in a challenge to some of the NIST contractors in 2007, Dr. Wood's court case with Attorney Jerry Leaphart. I helped prepare some of the documents for that in 2007. I've written a little bit about this in my free book, 9/11 Finding the Truth, which can be downloaded free, and the audiobook is free. That's from my website. Everybody who wants to download that, it's all free. So I talk about John Hutchinson in there as well. And so he'd been doing these experiments, and what was he creating? Well, guess what? He was creating things like the jellification of metal. So what's jellification of metal another form of? Well, it's another form of molten metal, isn't it? So he was taking a solid bar of aluminium and partly turning it to jelly with his mixing together of electrical energy, microwaves, magnetic fields. He had 2 tons of equipment to do this, 2 tons of equipment. Yet the energy to do this was a maximum of 1.5 kilowatts of energy that were used in these experiments. So what's 1.5 kilowatts? Well, a kettle in the UK to boil a cup of tea is 3 kilowatts of electricity these days, 3 kilowatts. So he's not using like a huge, massive, you know, he's using a regular wall outlet to power his equipment. He's not using a whole lot of, you know, power station or anything like that. Yet he's able to create these jellification effects in metal. He's able to make stainless steel rust. He's able to change one metal into another metal. He's able to levitate things to make them lift off and fly out of the area.
There's cars. We touched the cars going rusty and all toasted, but we didn't actually say some of the cars are turned over, like upside down, and they've been levitated, and we never touched on that.
We didn't, and they're also on that WTC page. So, you know, we can, let's just see if we...
Also, people witness testimony saying, I floated upstairs and similar, not quite that, but similar.
Let's mention 3 of them. David Hansher, the New York Daily News photographer, you Google his testimony, you'll see that he was levitated and carried a block as the tower was coming down. We have this famous 9/11 surfer, I think his first name's Blaise Pasquale, I think it is his name. He didn't come out until about 7 or 8 years after the events. I think he came out in 2010, and he says he was on the 26th floor, and he felt the building coming apart, and he kind of floated down to ground level, and he survived, and he actually became very depressed after this. He was one that was levitated. And then we've got accounts of a mysterious force going into his bag by René Davila. He talks about that. And another guy who was, he was lifted off and thrown against the wall. I've got a video clip where he talks about that. And John Hutchinson was essentially creating a levitation, an anti-gravity effect. This is what needs to be covered up at all costs. And guess what? By talking about bombs, nukes, just about anything, you can cover that stuff up really easily. And we've been talking about this since 2008. So we're now getting on for 7 years after we started talking about it. And still, hardly anybody knows about it. People know about 9/11 and all this stuff, but they don't know about Hurricane Erin. They don't know about John Hutchinson. They don't know any of this because the Truth Movement has covered it up. And that's what my book is about. Let's just go back...
As Dr. Julie Wood says, the people behind 9/11, they put so much effort into doing the event, do you think they forgot a cover story?
Correct. Do you think they forgot to plan a cover-up? The cover-up is even more criminal, I would argue, than the event itself, because of what's allowed to happen. You know, this is what we would argue. So, and I've written to David Ray Griffin, the author, I've written to him, I think, twice now to say that he is guilty of attempting to pervert the course of justice because he will not talk about what we've been talking about. He's written, five or maybe 6 books about 9/11. You will not find John Hutchinson's name mentioned anywhere in any of those 5 books, despite him submitting a court affidavit in a 9/11-related court case in 2007, which is on Dr. Wood's website, should anybody want to read it. I think before we get to the end, Matthew, I'd like to talk about going into the other side of the energy connection, our friend and Mr. Jones. Shall we talk about that?
Before we get to John Hutchinson, the military are completely aware of his work, having confiscated his work twice and getting into work with the military, I think on 2 occasions. I might be wrong. The Canadian military take all of the... I was going to briefly say, it's not just he's in his own house building these things. The military are aware of his work and they confiscated it. I think it were in
1990.
Yeah. But they did it twice. They took all his equipment. I'm sure.
That was later. They did it as well in 2008. I think it was. He had some hacker. Yeah, I don't think it was all confiscated.
I'm not unfamiliar with him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but the main.
I forgot to bring that up. So if you want to move on to Stephen Jones.
Well, we'll just sort of tie into what you just said there, because Colonel John Alexander, who people can look up, he talks about UFOs and stuff like that and other stuff. He worked with John Hutchison in 1983, and he observed and documented some of the effects, you know, the jellification of metal, which at that time when John was doing it, he couldn't reproduce it reliably. He's been able to reproduce it since. John Hutchison worked with John Alexander for 4 months doing these experiments. And at that time, John Alexander, Colonel John Alexander, head of the non-lethal weapons program, or he became that for a period of time, he was working for Los Alamos National Laboratories. Los Alamos National Laboratories, which, if people don't know, that's where the atomic bomb was developed in the 1940s, right? So we're not in good shape. We're not in good shape with this sort of these sorts of connections. Now, John was being investigated by them. He wasn't kind of trying to do things for them, but that, from what John told us, John Hutchison, that is, they already knew what he was doing. They already knew the effects that he was going to create and the way that they were going to unfold based on what setup he had. So they were familiar with this technology in 1983. Now let's talk about another thing to try and dispel another myth. It is claimed that Dr. Judy Wood doesn't talk about the evidence of nuclear effects at the World Trade Center, such as the cancer that was that victims have suffered, which the nukers would claim is caused by the radiation. Well, there wasn't a substantial amount of nuclear radiation at the World Trade Center site.
And could you it can not take be asbestos?
Some of it will be just the poisonous kind of toxic cocktail of dust, dustified steel, dustified computers, dustified. There was a little bit of asbestos as well, but that was actually they stopped using that halfway through the construction, I think, of one of the towers. But the thing that people need to understand, another of the key indicators that was found at the World Trade Center, which the nukers latch onto, is tritium. Tritium is a form of hydrogen. It's actually an isotope of hydrogen. It has, I understand, one or two extra neutrons in the nucleus, and I can't remember how many, but this was found about 50 times the normal level in water at the World Trade Center site. This was done with a Thomas Cahill study, I think. People have tried to claim that this proves that it was a nuclear bomb that went off, because that's what happened, and that is true. You do get tritium when a nuclear bomb goes off. However, the amount of tritium created. No, that's one of them. Yeah, it's the only. How can I put it? The mainstream physicists will tell you it's the only way you can get tritium is from a nuclear reaction, rather from a nuclear bomb going off. But there is another place going back a few years now where tritium was found to be being produced. And it was in experiments which were done in the late 1980s, early 1990s, in something called cold fusion. Cold fusion. That's not a good name for it. It should really be called low energy nuclear reactions.
People will get me that name.
Yes, indeed. We'll get on to that. Jump in just in a few closing minutes. So cold fusion. What's cold fusion? Well, cold fusion was a nuclear effect, and it was heralded by two chemists, Stanley Pons and Martin Fleischmann, at the end of the 1980s, 1989, they said they found out this process where they thought they could have a nuclear reaction which would create cheap energy at room temperature in basically a large test tube or a beaker on a laboratory bench. You know, you didn't need to build an expensive reactor. You didn't need to put all this uranium and have all this plutonium and stuff, the waste product and all that stuff. You didn't need any of that. They were going to produce this system where you could get cheap energy from this cold fusion reaction. They didn't call it cold fusion. That wasn't their name for it. That name was actually thought of by Dr. Stephen E. Thermite Jones. He and his colleague, Paul Palmer, dubbed the possible process cold fusion in 1989 or 1990, and that's the name that stuck. The scientists didn't like that name. They thought it was too unscientific. They wanted to call it either chemically assisted nuclear reactions or low energy nuclear reactions. And you can read about all of that in Dr. Eugene Mallet's book, Fire from Ice. So we mentioned Dr. Stephen E. Thermite Jones because in 2005, after the NIST reports were published, which was these 10,000 pages of technical reports, which allegedly explained the destruction of the World Trade Center. They were called the collapse of the World Trade Center towers. You can download the 10,000 pages if you want. I've downloaded those 10,000 pages in PDF files, and you can as well if you want to. You can still find them online for free if you have a poke round for them. They were published, I think, in August 2005. Stephen E. Jones came out in September 2005 or August 2005 saying, I think thermite was used to destroy the towers. So why is it that we've got this guy who just so happens to be a former researcher into cold fusion or low energy nuclear reactions, as it should be called. He did some experiments in something called muon catalyzed cold fusion, and he wrote papers about this as early as, I think, 1985. So yes, he was working on cold fusion at the same time as Pons and Fleischmann, not before, not necessarily before. Some people have written to me and claimed that Jones was working on cold fusion before Pons and Fleischmann. No, not true, because Pons and Fleischmann had been working for 5 years before they actually published anything or tried to publish anything.
Now, so, Stephen Jones came out, he announced cold fusion and killed any chance of a patent for the process for Pons and Fleischmann.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, that
was kill your own patent. Anytime, anything that's been disclosed before patenting is not unpatentable. So he kills their...
Allegedly, yeah, that was the way it unfolded, that he came out with his research and he was apparently talking to them and he backed them into a corner. I mean, again, some of this is covered in Malov's book. We don't have time to go into the details. But I've written an article, because I know that this is important. Not only for the reasons that we've gone through, because they had to cover up the connection to energy and they needed somebody. Now, this is my conjecture, obviously, but, you know, I think you'll see that it's pretty well reasoned conjecture. They needed somebody who knew about energy effects so that they knew what to cover up. And Jones was their man. Jones was their man because he knew that, these energy effects created certain side effects, and that's what needed to be covered up. And Jones was involved with that, I think. And somebody wrote to me earlier this year claiming that they wanted to write history of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth Group, which we haven't really talked about. Maybe we'll do another hour or two on that. But somebody, I was involved with the Scholars for 9/11 Truth Group, as we mentioned near the start of the program. And somebody wrote to me saying they wanted to write a history of that, which I've already written. I wrote that up starting in 2007, and that's what my book is. It starts off about the scholars group and goes on from there. They claimed they wanted to write a history of that. But when I actually probed them on this, and I've written a whole article about this and documented all the evidence of what they sent me in their emails and whatnot, it appears that this woman who wrote to me, a lady called Caroline Leach, was wanting to try and massage the story of Stephen E. Jones' connection to cold fusion and what I have posted about that, some of which I've said in brief here. Because a lot of what we've got is audio of Stephen E. Jones, you know, proving what he said about cold fusion, what he said about Pons and Fleischmann. And he's basically lying about them. You know, if you're not careful, he gets away with it. You know, you won't think he's lying. But he's basically lying about cold fusion. He's lying about Dr. Judy Wood's research. And he's lying about thermite on 9/11. And I've written all this up in probably two or three different articles, actually. And again, you want links, write to me, and I'll send you the links. So we immediately have a connection to energy. Not only from the evidence with, you know, Hurricane Erin, the electrostatic field, the Earth magnetic field, John Hutchison, which we haven't even fully gone through, but also with Stephen E. Jones. He had directly connected.
We didn't even talk about the jumpers and their strange behaviour.
No.
But
just to mention before we finish, Jones proudly proclaims that he did consultancy work for the US Department of Energy. You know, so what does that tell you?
So Jones is the guy who put the thermite story out, is the guy who named Judy Wood's work as space beams, and he named cold fusion and covered cold fusion up back in the 80s. Well, now, cold fusion would have given the world free energy, wouldn't it?
I think so. And tritium is also one of the factors that comes out in cold fusion, one of the substances that is formed in cold fusion experiments. So in other words, the Hutchinson effect, the things that John Hutchinson does, and cold fusion are related phenomena, and they are nuclear phenomena, which is why they had to put the nuke story out, because that muddles up the nuke side of things.
Wow, very clever people.
Indeed, they know what they're doing. They've got all their soldiers in order, and they've done a very good job.
Yeah, how he covered up the cold fusion, he got everybody to, instead of having actual scientific tests, he got everybody to vote whether, do we agree that it doesn't work, instead of actually testing it. And
that's right.
Charlie Pound did the song to cover that one up.
That's right, the gatekeeper song. Yep, you can listen to that, and that's sort of quite a good summary of that. And you've got some video and stuff, yeah.
Right, I think we're about out of time now, so.
I think we are.
Yeah, I think we'll have to continue this at a later date, and maybe get Judy Wooden to come and present her work a little bit better than me. And well, I think your book is about the cover up of Judy Wood's work, whereas Judy Wood is the work itself. So
yeah, essentially that's right. I mean, we've put it thus as a summary: Dr. Judy Wood has reverse engineered what happened on 9/11, especially to the World Trade Center at least, and I've tried to reverse engineer the cover up. Of that research and how it's been covered up.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much, Andrew. I'll speak to you again.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Matthew, for inviting me. Thank you very much for everyone for listening. I get passionate about this because it's very important, and I hope that you will give this due consideration and explore it for yourselves, and hopefully you will come to an understanding about it one way or another.
Well, this information's got to be put out there so we can say, water's wet, let's move on. You know, this is what happened. Let's no more bickering between groups. Look at the evidence, we'll see what happens. And, there we are. The evidence speaks for itself.
Right.
Okay, you've been listening to, Red Pill Raw Truth on the Shake and Wake Radio Network. Thank you very much.
nor did they slam to the ground. They turned it.
No more suspense. The wait is over. Now on Shake and Wake Radio, it's the BK Factor. Join me, BK, as I talk about current events, news, and Christianity. The BK Factor on Shake and Wake Radio.